This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Wednesday, April 15th. I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, Mamie Gaita has this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News. We'll also have a look at your forecast for Champaign-Urbana, but first, today's news. Attorneys say it could be 2 years or longer before former Governor Rod Blagojevich goes on trial on federal corruption charges. Leonard Kavais is a law professor at DePaul University. He estimated the case will come to trial within 2 years. But it could take a good deal longer if the government adds more charges or new defendants. He pleaded not guilty Tuesday to 16 counts of federal racketeering and fraud charges. The plea makes official Blagojevich's denial of political malfeasance that authorities say included a scheme to sell President Barack Obama's former U.S. Senate seat. Blagojevich looked relaxed as he stood in court alongside his brother, who also pleaded not guilty. Meanwhile, an attorney for Illinois' disgraced and impeached former governor says he needs some help defending Blagojevich from criminal charges. Robert Wildebor has that story.
In his first court appearance since being arrested in December, Blagojevich pleaded not guilty to charges that he used his office to enrich himself and fatten his campaign fund.
I'm glad this process has finally begun. It's the beginning of me being able to prove my innocence and clear my name and be vindicated of what are inaccurate allegations.
During a 9-minute hearing, Blagojevich's lawyer, Sheldon Sorosky, asked the judge for some time before proceeding with the case as he needs to put together a legal team. Two high-profile attorneys in Chicago had signed on to the case, but later quit, one because the former governor wouldn't listen to him and the other because of a potential conflict of interest. Right now, Sorosky is Blagojevich's only lawyer in a case which includes thousands of documents and recorded phone calls. Sorosky is also hoping to tap into the former governor's campaign fund so he can pay for the legal team. The federal judge hearing the case has given him a week. I'm Robert Wildebor.
Champaign voters will get another chance to vote on an advisory referendum advocating more funding for township general assistance. Electors at the annual town meeting for City of Champaign Township voted last night to place the question on next year's primary ballot. Champaign voters approved a non-binding referendum for more township aid for the poor last spring, but they've twice defeated a referendum calling for actual property tax hikes. Randall Cotton, who sponsored the question before the town meeting last night, says they'll have to work harder to get their message across.
There's a growing group of people who are really very acutely interested in this issue, and of course it's more timely and important now than any time before in recent memory because of the incredible downturn in the economy.
Cotton says the referendum that City of Champaign voters will see next year will provide more details than previous ones. He says it will point out that Champaign's funding for general assistance is less than 10% of the average funding levels for Springfield, Bloomington, and Peoria, and the resolution will call for a cap on how much property tax bills can go up. Meanwhile, voters at the Cunningham town meeting in Urbana voted 82-13 last night against a proposal to put an advisory referendum on the ballot calling for instant runoff voting. It's the second year in a row that Democrats brought out enough supporters to the town meeting to block the referendum. The Champaign City Council has changed its mind and will continue to award grants to social service agencies for another 2 years, but there will be new strings attached, as AM 580's Jim Meadows reports.
The grants using federal funds were scheduled to end July 1st. The City of Champaign has been taking a different approach to social service funding, working with the school and park districts to create its own initiatives targeting troubled neighborhoods. But City Council members decided at last night's study session to continue granting money to local social service agencies through 2012, using $300,000 in city funds tagged for urban renewal. City Manager Steve Carter says these grants will only go to agencies ready to follow the pattern of the city's neighborhood initiatives.
It'll be different because it'll be very much targeted, both in terms of geographic location in the community and the types of programs we're looking for, as opposed to having it be totally open-ended.
Champaign officials changed their minds because they saw local social service agencies losing funding due to the slumping economy, while the need for their services increased. At the same time, officials with the agencies argued the city funding can be crucial in obtaining matching grants. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Deere & Company says it plans to combine operations that make its iconic green and yellow tractors with another unit that manufactures chainsaws and other products. The result will be about 200 job cuts. The world's largest maker of farm machinery said yesterday the restructured unit will help it better meet customer needs, cut costs, and boost global sales, which have tumbled. While the Moline-based company's farm machinery sales have been strong, the company has slashed its 2009 earnings outlook. The new unit will be called the Agriculture and Turf Division. The job cuts will involve salaried workers. They're expected by the end of September and will be made through voluntary separations. For the latest newscast online, go to will.illinois.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Bonser. When people on death row proclaim their innocence, it's often extremely difficult to believe them. But they're sometimes right, even when others' words make them sound very wrong. Commentator Amy Guida explains in this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News.
In 1987, the Supreme Court of Louisiana upheld John Thompson's conviction and death sentence for murder. A witness, the court wrote, saw Thompson grab the victim from behind and throw him to the ground. Another witness heard the victim offer his assailant his wallet and his ring to spare his life. But John Thompson, the court explained, shot the victim anyway, 6 times, from afar. "Why did he have to shoot me?" the robbery victim asked a responding police officer before he died. The justices called John Thompson defendant, in their opinion, upholding his death sentence, in phrases like, "defendant randomly chose his victim and murdered him." I know from writing appeals for a prosecutor that the term defendant depersonalizes. Call a defendant by his given name, and that might engender unnecessary sympathy. I read language in horrible crime stories just like that routinely in my work, and I usually don't feel one bit of sympathy for the defendant. My best friend from high school's mother was murdered by despicable sociopathic thugs who wanted money, so I know from firsthand experience that really bad people do really bad things to really good people. Plus, I'm a lawyer, and I generally trust appellate courts to take a good look at the file and the law and get things right. The evidence and that same sort of attitude about crime, criminals, and courts sealed John Thompson's fate. After the opinion came down, he faced 7 execution dates. It was only when the 7th neared that new evidence, if you can call it that, appeared. Turns out that a prosecutor had withheld crucial and completely exculpatory evidence in Thompson's case. It's a convoluted story, but blood left by the perpetrator at another crime scene was not John Thompson's. And that blood and that first conviction played a major role in the conviction outcome in John Thompson's murder trial and death sentence. No blood link, no crime link. No wonder that a second jury took mere minutes to acquit John Thompson of murder the second time around. I read the court opinions in John Thompson's case last week, all of them, just before I met John Thompson in person. I was struck by how persuasive the court's early opinions were before any of the judges knew about the exculpatory blood evidence and how easy it was to be sucked in by the crime story, as the courts explained it, even though I knew that Thompson had later been exonerated. I can't imagine being Thompson and reading the early opinions as he did, and then reading the same court's turnabout, both in holding and in language. Thompson was once a despicable defendant who randomly chose another to murder, but he suddenly became a vulnerable man, in the court's words, who was but a victim himself. When I talked with Thompson and one of his fellow death row exonerees last week, one of them told me that if they wanted to leave us with one thing, it was that we shouldn't believe everything we read. Turns out that it holds true, even for court opinions. I'm Amy Guida.
Amy Guida is an assistant professor of journalism and law at the University of Illinois. In the forecast for East Central Illinois, we expect partly sunny skies today with a high around 55 degrees. Tonight, mostly clear, the low around 38. Sunny skies tomorrow, the high around 65. Mostly clear tomorrow night, the low around 42. Sunny skies Friday, the high around 70. Partly cloudy Friday night, the low around 48. Mostly cloudy Saturday, a chance of showers, the high around 68. Cloudy Saturday evening, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, the low around 42. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. For Wednesday, April 15th, you can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, will.illinois.edu. I'm Jeff Bosser, AM 580 News.